Night Talk on your number one news and talk station.
Tonight Talk on 702 with me, Gugs Mhlongo, and it's been an interesting day in regional politics as the situation in Zimbabwe unfolds. Still lots of uncertainty. The SA Southern African Democratic Community's envoys allegedly there in the country. Talks haven't begun, but there's still lots of questions about what we've seen in the last 24 hours. And so we're joined on the line by someone who's been looking and understanding Zimbabwean politics for over three decades, head of department at the Department of Anthropology and Developmental Studies at UJ, Professor David Moore. Professor, good evening.
Good evening, Gugs. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much for joining us. So there's been some confusion about, is this a coup? Is it not a coup? The military speaking via ZBC in the early hours of today saying it is not, saying it is part of the National Democratic Project, saying it is in line with constitutionalism. What exactly is happening in our neighbor north of the Limpopo?
Well, it is and it isn't a coup. SADC and the AU have made it very clear that coups will not be abided, right? So it's been a very carefully phrased statement, the one that Constantino Chiwenga read out on Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you often don't announce that you're going to do a coup 24 hours in advance, right? You
mm-hmm.
usually do the coup first and then you announce.
Yes.
So it was sort of a preliminary gesture, you know, maybe if Robert Mugabe wanted to fold, nothing would have happened. But how that statement is phrased makes it appear to be, and it actually is in many ways, to be an internal ZANU-PF process. Now, of course, ZANU-PF is intricately woven with the state and vice versa,
mm-hmm.
much as South Africa, except even much, much more so. So these categories become very confused, but it becomes a sort of semantic, linguistic project to say to SADC, look, we are not arresting, we're not killing the president, we're not taking the state, per se.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back and listen to General Moyo's speech, what was it, 4 o'clock
this morning,
something like that,
mm-hmm.
Saying, you know, Parliament should go on, the security forces should do what they have done as usual.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a semi-coup. It's sort of a coup which isn't a coup. You know, some people say you've got to have blood spilled all over the place if there's a coup. But no, there are many bloodless coups. There are palace revolutions. So we could say this is a coup within ZANU-PF, but of course it is state actors. The military is our state actors, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of a coup. But SADC is not going to consider it a coup. It's not going to warrant, you know, an invasion from a SADC standing force, which really isn't standing anyway.
Because that was going to be my next question. Say it was, and Durko speaking on this station yesterday called it an unconstitutional change of government. Say it was that, and the AU, perhaps in SADC, needed to get involved. And often people say, why don't these regional bodies or these collaborative bodies get involved? I mean, what could be their intervention? And at the moment, we've seen special envoys going there. The president of Angola, who's the head of, what is his role in SADC? He is the head of the political organ. He's been spoken to as well. So what could happen here? What is SADC's authority, which obviously is limited by Zimbabwe's sovereignty as a sovereign nation state?
Exactly, yeah. Sovereignty is a big deal. And, you know, these leaders don't want other leaders infringing on their territory. But, of course, in a de facto sense, in SADC, South Africa is the biggest actor. There is supposed to be a standing peacekeeping force, but it's really not there. You know, there's some training. I think maybe it's even in Harare. And another thing is, it's mostly funded by the EU. So, but let's just say that everything was running smoothly, and this was a coup which took off the head of state. In other words, it, you know, put the president in prison and so on. Then there would be a case for intervention. And you know, ECOWAS in West Africa has been more proactive about things like this. You may remember it wasn't so long ago the Gambia election was thrown out, and ECOWAS said no. So if you, that's one thing that could happen. SADC has to say I can't do it before the AU can come in, and then if the AU can't handle it, then the UN can come in. But let's say, okay, we know that that's not happening. What we have is heads of state meeting at the SADC summit, and we have various envoys going now. But, of course, we know what has happened in Zimbabwe's history in terms of its attempts to gain a democratic dispensation. We know that there's been the famous South African quiet diplomacy. So Thabo Mbeki, you know, has moved in very, very many mysterious and not so many mysterious ways to create a scenario that he would like. Most evident in the 2008-2009 Government of National Unity. It was basically a Thabo Mbeki creation because Mugabe had really, really destroyed his legitimacy by killing so many people in June 2008. I would bet you, this is my colleague Chris Landsberg often says, I would bet you my bottom dollar, but I wouldn't quite bet a bottom dollar. But Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is the vice president who was kicked out of his post, and you know, now he's going back.
So former vice president of the country, but retains his position within the party?
No, he was actually kicked out of the party too. Okay. Yes, he was, yeah. Anyway, he spent a lot of time here in South Africa. Well, you can just guess who he was talking to. So I would think this plan was made in cooperation with South African authorities, perhaps the former president, perhaps people in Durko, so that this is very carefully planned. And again, that document that Constantino Chiwenga read out was also very carefully crafted so that it looked like an internal affair. So that's the way the diplomacy is working. And I, you know, I kind of think these envoys which are going up there, it's kind of a show, but it's also to put a bit of pressure on Mugabe if he is hesitating to say, look, Mr. Mugabe, you better go with this, otherwise it's going to be really, really messy. And you won't have any bread to put your butter on. So, you know, they may be offering him amnesties, but I think the incoming or the returning Lacoste faction, the Emmerson Mnangagwa faction, I think they're not going to kick out Mugabe.
What would be the benefit of not, if he's someone who has also now lost essentially, if it is true, the support of military, what would be the benefit of keeping him?
Oh, just to be nice, you know?
Okay.
Not to place burden on South Africa. And in order to say, look, we have protected you from these villainous characters, Jonathan Moyo, Chombo, Augustin Chiruri, who was the commissioner of police. He was in that G40 faction too. He's been arrested or detained. I don't think these are really legal arrests because it's the military police who do it. They'll say, well, look, we protected you from these foolish characters who would have driven the party to ruin. Now, do you want to end your days in disgrace in Saudi Arabia? Oh, disgrace, that was a bad word to use. We'll just let you stay if you agree with what we want. And you can remain president until December, which is when they were planning to have the extraordinary ZANU-PF conference, 1 year before the normal one. So normally it would have been in December 2019, but Mugabe and whoever is whispering in his ear wanted to push it up to December this year.
And that's the one where it was roundly or largely speculated that the current First Lady could potentially be announced as VP.
Exactly. And the plan was, at least from me reading newspapers, in Zimbabwe, I don't have access to people who make these plans, but the plan was to have three vice presidents. Okay, so you know now that in ZANU-PF you have two vice presidents. One is from the former ZAPU party, Joshua Nkomo's party, Zimbabwe African People's Union, which was squashed in the 1980s and absorbed and swallowed. then they would have a vice president, and that is Boko, okay? And the second vice president used to be a woman, which was Joyce Mujuru. You may remember in 2014, mm-hmm. Grace Mugabe, in cooperation with Emmerson Mnangagwa and Jonathan Moyle, pushed Joyce Mujuru out. And that's where Grace Mugabe really got her stride as a public performer, as, you know, this quite crude language she would use to help push people out. I think that's where she started to feel the real taste of power. So in 2014, they decided, okay, we don't have to have a woman vice president, then Emmerson Mnangagwa could be vice president. Mm-hmm. Now they were trying to say we need a woman vice president, a former ZAPU vice president, and a third one, which would be, they were hoping, Sidney Sekeramai, who is the Minister of Defense. And he's a medical doctor. He was studying in Sweden, and he was active in exile politics in the 1970s, so he's part of the old guard. Very quiet, but also, you know, he's been Minister of Defense. He was involved in the Gikurahundi massacres in the 1980s, just like Mnangagwa was. So they were hoping to have, you know, he would have been sort of an olive branch to the old guard. Mm-hmm. They were hoping to have those three vice presidents. They could have had Sekeramai as the first vice president. That means if Mugabe had died or retired, Sekeramai would have been, I think, for 90 days, or I can't quite remember how many days, he would have been the president of the country. Mm-hmm. Okay? That was the plan. But that plan has, of course, they had to get rid of Mnangagwa. Well, he came back. These characters, these G40, supposedly a younger generation of intellectuals, and some of them are, one of them is the nephew of Mugabe, Patrick Zhao is a nephew, Jonathan Moyle, the professor of political science and administration at the University of Zimbabwe, who'd worked for the Ford Foundation in Kenya, and apparently took some money, worked for Wits University here in Johannesburg for quite a while, but then he rushed back in 2000 to help Mugabe win his election.
I want to talk about this G40. You touched mm-hmm. on it, and it's come up quite a bit in the mm-hmm. last couple of years. Many denials against, about its existing, about people mm-hmm. saying they're a part of it. And today, seeing allegations, rumors that members, alleged members of the G40, among the people who are being detained. So we don't know if they've been arrested or been detained. Yeah. And the G40, or the ZANU-PF Generation 40.
Exactly.
Who are these people? What is this grouping?
Well, it does bring into play the generations in Zimbabwean politics. And this is sort of a middle generation between the old guard like Robert Mugabe and Emmerson Mnangagwa, who's 75 and has been with Mugabe since the 1970s, has been his closest personal intelligence guy and lawyer and so on. And then, of course, there's a younger generation which came up in the early 2000s in the student movement, and who were really the shock troops for the movement for democratic change. So they're probably in their 30s now. But this middle generation, and Jonathan Moyle is probably the most obvious, the most famous or infamous member of this group. Jonathan Moyle is probably 55 by now. He was in the training camps in Mozambique or Tanzania during the Liberation War, but he escaped. And he went to the United States, and with funding from who knows where, it might have been from some of the members of ZANU at the time, studied, got his PhD at the University of Southern California in public policy, and then came back to be a professor at University of Zimbabwe, mm-hmm. and wrote this book in 1992, which was a vote about, he was a classical liberal, you know, about the faulty elections and so on. So an extremely brilliant guy, but a bit volatile. So he's kind of the brains behind it. And it was around 2000, yes, he came back to Zimbabwe, and he was the brains behind the election in June 2000, which, you know, ZANU-PF was very much afraid, because the anti-ZANU-PF constitutional referendum was lost to ZANU-PF in February 2000. So then they really pushed ahead on the land invasions, got the war veterans with them and the military behind them, and it was a, and then they had the election in June 2000. They were quite scared that the MDC was going to win. So Jonathan Moore can take a lot of credit for managing that election.
Mm.
Then he got into cabinet. At that time, the president could appoint people into cabinet, a few, maybe six, doesn't matter. So Jonathan Moore then became Minister of Information, and he was running all the state newspapers, and he was creating these laws which made it very difficult for journalists to operate freely. He was pressuring, you know, the independent newspapers which were bought out and so on. So that's where he became very famous in the information realm. You have the guy who was recently made Minister of Finance, Isaac Trumbull. The name escapes me right now. I'm not too sure about his background. I think he has a PhD in education or something, nothing to do with finance.
Mm-hmm.
You have Patrick Zhao, who is the nephew of Mugabe. I think he has a master's degree from the Vitz School of Governance. And he, I think, has been Minister of Indigenization, and also Xavier Kazu Kuweri, who has also been Minister of Indigenization. I'm not sure what the ministries are now.
Mm-hmm.
They have all sort of pushed this idea of indigenization of business, taking more land from the white farmers and so on. So they have, and there's a few more, including Augustin Chiruri, who is was the commissioner of police. He's part of the old guard. In fact, he in 1978 was part of a group that Mugabe felt was challenging his power. He spent weeks in pits in prison,
mm-hmm.
in the camps in Mozambique. So there's quite a varied group. So they have been the ones called Generation 40.
The first lady's name comes up.
Oh, well, yes.
With regards to Generation 40, which mm-hmm. is quite interesting. So all mm-hmm. the characters you've mentioned, Moyo, Kasekwero, Chombo, mm-hmm. Chihuri, Chipanga, mm-hmm. and Grace Mugabe's name also coming up
as
a potential figure that's in the background, but part mm-hmm. of the G40.
Yeah, I think they thought that was how they could get Mugabe's year, although certainly Jonathan Moyo would have had it. And so they were they using her, and then did she get just as smart as them? did she take the initiative to push Mnangagwa out? Did they, using her, you know, a very complex relationship right there. Jonathan Moyle's very volatile, so is Grace Mugabe. I think people who wanted stability would have feared the two of them being in power if and when Robert Mugabe dies, you know. So, people interested in stability want this military, want Mnangagwa. Mnangagwa's been very close to the British for years and years and years. He's a conservative economist. And in terms of economic thinking, he's conservative. He would probably, you know, arrange for compensation for the white farmers that would make the markets more friendly. He'd be friendly to the IMF and the World Bank, all of these sorts of things. Although I think, you know, my Zimbabwean students say that the G40 would soon follow orthodox liberal economic lines once Mugabe died, because they'd be forced to. And they don't really have an ideology anyway. They just mm-hmm. play this ideological game. So, we do have this economic crisis, which is hitting again, and nobody wants the same sort of economic crisis that happened in 2008, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So there's international and regional support for a group which would seem to indicate more stability than the Grace Mugabe, Jonathan Moyo team. So that's why there's not going to be much pressure. Nobody's complaining about this so-called coup. The complaints will happen if Robert Mugabe remains stubborn. Then, you know, they kind of reach. That's a big wall to face. If he says no, and remember, after Chiwenga made that statement, they had a Politburo meeting, and the Politburo led by Robert Mugabe said, well, these are treasonous. This is treason.
Mm, they called it treasonous conduct.
Yeah. So the army then had to take this action, which they were probably hoping they didn't have to do. And, you know, Chiwenga, I think, who has been very close to Mugabe, very, very close to Emmerson Mnangagwa, tried to talk with Mugabe, you know, by himself, and that talk was refused. So they went this far. Now, if they have to go further, it's going to be difficult. G40 has gone as far as it can, and they have lost because they don't have guns. They might have had some support in the police, but, you know, the police aren't really that much beside an army. So what will SADC do if Mugabe says no and the army has to take, and Mnangagwa has to take a stronger step? That's the kind of dead wall that you come up to when you have policies like this. I think if Mugabe didn't agree to, you know, Mnangagwa going to the December conference with the intention of becoming vice president, would Mnangagwa say, okay, well, I'm going to be president now, and these guys are going to send you off to Siberia? And one is hearing more talk about this, would the group of people who are talking, whoever they are, agree to another government of national unity, which would bring Morgan Tsvangirai into it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Joyce Majuru, who was kicked out in the end of 2014 and started up her own very, very small party. So some people are saying, well, this might, you know, make it easier, and then you'd have a longer transitional government till maybe the end of 2018 or middle of 2019 and have proper elections. I'm not sure if that would work. In any case, Morgan Tsvangirai is not very, very healthy.
Hmm.
And the MDC is broken into many pieces. Maybe some MDC people would like the idea of having a little bit of a respite from electioneering, because, you know, they don't have as many resources as they used to, and they're quite split. So that's one thing that could be on the table. I don't know why Mugabe would agree to something like that, whereas he wouldn't agree to ZANU-PF having their next month, you know, to prepare for the December Congress and then have elections in 2018. I don't know why he might not agree to that. I don't know how healthy he is still, you know. So are they really dealing with Grace Mugabe? And Grace Mugabe has no official status yet except for being a head of the Women's League.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.